Welcome back to Bullseye on the afternoon on AM 930 WEOL. We're taking you through a Friday afternoon and into the early stages of your Friday evening, leading you into Cleveland Indians baseball tonight. Game two of the four-game weekend series between the Tribe and Toronto Blue Jays. It all begins today for us at 6:35 with Indians warm-up. First pitch at 7:10. And time to continue talking Tribe Hill. Here we'll do that with Jim Rosenhaus with the Cleveland Indians Radio Network. And don't forget, when we wrap up with Rosie, we're giving away four tickets to see the Indians take on the Atlanta Braves on Sunday, April 21st, thanks to our good friends at North Ridgeville Convenience, Sunoco on Center Ridge and Barton Roads. So be sure to listen for your cue to call here in just a few. Rosie, as always, we sincerely appreciate the time. How are you today?
I'm doing great. How are you doing, Bull?
So far, so good. And boy, what a very interesting game last night. You and I were talking before we came on the air here. The near no-hit bid. A very odd near no-hit bid as well that was, of course, taken into the ninth inning. A lot of walks. The Blue Jays left a small village on the base paths. But, you know, in the end, certainly the Indians had enough to get it done, and Trevor Bauer was certainly at the forefront of it yesterday. He has just been incredible, Rosie, in his first two starts of the year. Have you noticed any differences, or have there been some things that have really stood out about him through two starts that maybe weren't there last year?
Well, I think the biggest difference is he really worked on his changeup in the offseason. And it's one thing to work on a new pitch, but I think we've seen the last 2 years from Trevor Bauer heading into last season. It was the slider that he had worked on. He'll use it, and he's committed to it when he develops a pitch that he thinks can help him. And he really thought that the changeup could. And, I mean, the first three starts of spring training, he didn't throw a breaking ball. All he threw were fastballs and changeups to really work on that changeup. So I think that's just one more thing that hitters have to be aware of. And he uses it as a strikeout pitch at times, or a pitch that maybe he can get some early contact on. But that would be the biggest difference in terms of development. And it's hard to find much new from Bauer because, you know, he's always working on something, and he had a really good year last year, which would be hard to equal this year, but at least so far he's gone above and beyond what he did a year ago.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to argue with the results. He's given up a hit in his first two starts, and of course he's gone deep into his first two starts as well. And I want to stick with that, Rosie, for just a second here, because I think it's really fascinating. People will look at the total number of pitches, and, you know, last night it was broken down, the number of pitches he threw. I think he threw 15 changeups and about 16 sliders. Now, people may look at that number and think, okay, that's, you know, just over 30 pitches, and in the grand scheme of things, I think he threw 117. But those 30 pitches are such a big-time difference maker because those pitches were so effective. And you mentioned they were used in many situations as a strikeout pitch for him. Can you explain why, even though it was only 30 pitches with the sliders and the changeups that he threw, why those 30 make such a gigantic difference for a guy like him with such a big pitch arsenal?
Well, I think it takes hitters off of his fastball, which is really good. He was in the mid-90s again last night, and he locates it well. But just that change of speed and then the break really, I think, gives hitters a hard time because it's just, if he went out there and just pumped fastballs, I think he'd probably be fairly effective. But by changing the timing and ruining timing of hitters, you see what the results have been. So it really is interesting. And, you know, it doesn't take many, like, if you throw too many changeups, you can get in trouble, and same with breaking pitches. So, you know, I think he's still a fastball pitcher, but the rest of it comes into play at certain times and at effective times for him.
Yeah, no doubt about that. And I think, you know, it's interesting with him because it feels like he's kind of a field guy. And I think when he got into trouble early on in yesterday's game, you know, he had the inning where he threw just over 30 pitches. And Rosie, that was a steady diet of breaking balls. And as you're watching that, you're thinking, is he ever going to throw somebody else? Is he going to throw something else? But then why would he throw anything else? That curveball was so effective after he backed himself into a corner. That's primarily what he used to get himself out of the jam.
Yeah, it's you know, he's like a professor out there, and he works really well with Roberto Perez. So, yeah, sometimes you see him stick with a certain pitch at, you know, for maybe what you think is too long. And look, he, you know, baseball's the easiest game to second guess on certain things, but I think they have it pretty well figured out, those two, in terms of how they want to go about attacking hitters.
No question about that, and I'm glad you brought up Roberto Perez, because anytime you talk about a game that had as many really fascinating intricacies, like we saw yesterday, you know, a near no-hit bid with a couple of hit batsmen and, of course, all the walks associated as well. While the Indians pitchers performed well last night, they really kept Roberto Perez extraordinarily busy behind the dish. And, you know, oftentimes I think fans get too fixated on what a guy does when he is swinging a bat, but I think sometimes they forget about just how important he is defensively in handling this pitching staff. And, Rosie, I think that's been one of the more overlooked aspects of Roberto Perez's game this year, and I think it was especially on display last night.
Well, if you notice, I think after his first two starts, one of the first things that Trevor Bauer talked about was the work of Perez behind the plate. So he certainly recognizes the value there in terms of blocking pitches and calling pitches. And would they like him to hit more? Sure. Are they going to get the kind of production offensively that they got from Yan Gomes? Probably not, but I think he makes up for it, or at least equals what Gomes was doing back there behind the plate, because Gomer was really good too. But there's no drop-off there with Roberto Perez. And in the case of Bauer, those two have been working together for a while. In fact, when Perez was struggling to get playing time, at least he knew that once a week or every fifth day, whenever Bauer would throw, there was a really good chance he'd be behind the plate. So they have a great working relationship together, and I think it matters, and it makes a big difference.
Jim Rosenhaus with the Cleveland Indians Radio Network joining us here on Bullseye on the Afternoon. Tribe Baseball coming your way a little bit later on tonight. Game two of the series between the Tribe and Toronto Blue Jays, 6:35. Indians warm-up, 7:10 first pitch. Rosie, a guy that was talked about a lot in spring training was John Edwards, and while he didn't allow any runs last night, he seems a little uneasy on the mound, or at least he has in the last two appearances. You feel like there's any apprehension there, or do you have any idea what might be causing that the last two times out? I mean, he does have a couple wins on the year. It just seems like he's appeared to be a little uneasy in his last two appearances.
I don't know. He's a guy who hasn't pitched in a couple of years, so I'm sure it will take him some time to really find his rhythm and find his groove. I know it was there during spring training, but obviously during the regular season, it's a little bit different. I think it's just the challenge of anybody who hasn't been, you know, in terms of a pitcher who hasn't been on the mound in major league games all that often. Number one, in his career, very little time on a major league mound in his career. And then certainly recently coming back from the Tommy John surgery. So I'm going to guess that, you know, it's just he hasn't been out there that much. So in terms of being comfortable or in a rhythm, that type of thing, that might be hard to get to for him on a consistent basis early on.
Sure. I mean, I think that's perfectly understandable. And, you know, when you're pitching in spring training in Arizona, you know, it's a little bit different than when you're pitching under the lights in some adverse conditions when it's a little wet and it's a little cold, no doubt about that. Well, the offense certainly seemed to turn a little bit of a corner last night. Seemed like there was certainly at least a little more balance 1-9 yesterday. But one guy has remained consistent throughout the course of the year, Rosie, and that's Carlos Santana. And, you know, boy, notoriously, he's been a slow starter, but that's not been the case this year, not only in the regular season so far, but really since the beginning of spring training. I mean, he's hit the ball extraordinarily well. What, if anything, have you noticed that's been different about him, not only in spring training, but also throughout the first few games of the year as opposed to years past?
Well, clearly different, and it's something that he talked about. Victor Rodriguez, the assistant hitting coach, talked about it. Ty Van Berkelio, the hitting coach, talked about it during spring training. Is trying to figure out a way to maybe keep him with a focus more toward hitting the ball up the middle of the diamond, left center, right center, instead of trying to pull it as much. They thought that he could be more effective that way. And he did that all spring. Sometimes, though, that's hard to carry through into the regular season. You get a little more amped up and you're looking to hit home runs, things like that. But we haven't seen that yet from Carlos. And that's really encouraging. He stayed with the same approach that he had all spring, working the middle of the diamond, He's actually been able to hit the ball through the shift on that right side a couple of times when he's a left-handed hitter. So some really encouraging signs from him early on, because you're right, it usually starts slow and then heats up with the weather. So if he can do that again off of this start, you know, he's looking at a big, big season, which would be certainly very well received by this team that's looking for offense.
The constant communication that goes on with a lot of these guys behind the scenes sometimes gets overlooked as well. And I thought it was interesting yesterday after the game, Tyler Naquin, who of course has been under the microscope since the beginning of the season, he had a couple of hits last night. But after the game, you know, he had mentioned that he's been getting some advice from a lot of guys. And, you know, he's getting advice from more than just coaches. He's getting some advice from his teammates as well. He credited Hanley Ramirez with helping him out. And he mentioned that, you know, since Frankie Lindor has rejoined the team and he's there every day now, having those guys kind of take a look from the outside and help him out has certainly made a big, big difference as well. And yesterday, you know, he had a couple of hits. I think it's interesting in baseball how you certainly see a lot of that. It's not just the coaching staff that's getting in there and helping these guys out, but teammates also stepping up and noticing things that, you know, a lot of times these guys just don't notice. And again, that really stood out to me with Tyler Naquin yesterday. You get the sense that maybe he's beginning to turn the corner a bit.
Yeah, and Bull, I mean, he played five games. So when people say, you know, as he turned the corner, was he in a slump? No, he had a little trouble the first five games of the year. And I just, I struggle so much with when people draw conclusions about the first week of the baseball season. It's absurd. Last year, Jose Ramirez was struggling mightily for the first 3 weeks, and he ended up, you know, with a remarkable season, even with the stretch in the last 2 months where he did struggle. But, you know, I think Naquin felt really good about his spring, and he came into the season and had a couple of games where he was struggling to make contact. So he sought out a teammate to, you know, see if there was just something minor that he could adjust. And obviously he, you know, was able to put some good things into play last night. So he's going to be just fine. But in regards to your point about, you know, players helping players, I think Michael Brantley was really, really good at that. And he was good to Francisco Lindor in terms of giving him some guidance and tips on his swing when he needed it, swing and approach at the plate. And it's amazing because you mentioned that, you know, he's back and he's helped out Naquin, or at least according to Tyler, he has. And you can see it on the bench during the games. He's doing a real nice job of being engaged even when he's not available in the lineup. And that is huge. I think that's what made Michael Brantley so popular here and such a big part of what happened. And Frankie may be picking up on some of that and trying to be that type of player if he can.
Yeah, and that's the kind of impact that sometimes you really can't measure. And, you know, I wanted to bring it back around to Lindor here because, of course, earlier in the week, the news that we heard seemed pretty encouraging. And I think, you know, every day it seems like we're getting a new update on the timetable for Frankie Lindor. What's the latest there? I mean, I think we heard at least 3 weeks. Are we hearing anything different? Is it realistic to think that he might be able to rejoin the team at the beginning of May?
Well, it sounds like, and this was dating back to Wednesday, at that time they said 7 to 10 days of activities gradually increasing each day, and then kind of take stock at the end of that 7 to 10 day period as to whether he's ready to go out on a rehab assignment. So say you take it to 10 days, I gotta think he would need at least a week on a rehab assignment. So then you're looking at, you know, 17 days, and you are getting near the beginning portion of May. So I think that's fair to say, you know, somewhere around May. But again, I think the Indians just don't want to put any timetable on it because, you know, they don't want Frankie to feel like he has to be back at a certain time and then he rushes his rehab. Or if he's back sooner, then that's great. But I think they're just real hesitant. And maybe until he gets to the end of that 7 to 10 day time frame, before they really say, hey, you know what, he's going to be back the first week of May or the last week of April, that type of thing.
All right, Rosie, well, we'll cut you loose on this. I mean, that's obviously good news on Frankie Lindor. What about Jason Kipnis? I know yesterday during Indians warm-up, it was talked about with Terry Francona and Tom Hamilton that Kipnis has actually looked pretty good taking ground balls. Seems like he's on the right track. When do we expect he might be suiting up for the Tribe again?
Well, he'll play in Columbus tonight, which is good. And the thing will be with him, how many at-bats does he need at Columbus to be ready, because they wouldn't send him on the rehab assignment if he wasn't healthy. So that part of it's behind him. But he really didn't have a whole lot of at-bats during spring training because of the various different injuries that he was kind of working through. He needs at-bats. So I don't know. Is that a week? Is it less than a week? I have a hunch the Indians are going away on a three-city, nine-game road trip. I'll bet we see him on that road trip, I would think, at some point in time. So he's obviously a lot further along than Lindor is, but certainly encouraging that he's starting a rehab assignment tonight, getting those at-bats in and really making progress toward returning.
Absolutely. Well, Rosie, as always, we appreciate the time very much, and we look forward to hearing your call against the Blue Jays tonight.
You got it, Bull. Thank you.
Thank you. Again, that's Jim Rosenhaus with the Cleveland Indians Radio Network joining us here on Bullseye on the Afternoon. All right, phone lines are open, 440-322-0930. That's the number to call. We'll take the first caller for a four-pack of tickets to see the Indians take on the Atlanta Braves on Sunday, April 21st. Thanks to our good friends at North Ridgeville Convenience Sunoco on Center Ridge in Barton Roads. They're open every day of the year, so make sure you stop by and pay them a visit. Again, 440-322-0930. We'll take the first caller for a four-pack of tickets to see the Indians take on the Braves on Sunday, April 21st. Time for a break here on Bullseye on the Afternoon. Steve Bailey and I come back after this on AM 930 WEOL.